formation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is back. The kicker comes through.
We're back. One down, hopefully at least 12 to go. Welcome back to another episode of the Fire Tom Herman Podcast, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Noah as usual. And for today's episode, we're reacting to what we saw from the Horns against UTEP last week. And then we're going to make some predictions for the next game on the other side of this bye week, coming up against Texas Tech. Noah, Texas took care of business against UTEP like they were supposed to, which wouldn't seem like that much of an achievement if it wasn't for a complete meltdown by seemingly the entire rest of the conference.
Yeah, well, you know, not everybody in the conference can be back, Josh. They're not all... We're not all Texas, okay? But no, it was a good team win, solid. I think that it's what everybody expected, but then also more than what everybody expected, kind of at the same time. Which is always fun for non-conference games. And yeah, you know, we've been in those positions of losing to, well, not P5 or not G5 schools, but, you know, like low tier P5 schools and struggling with the Tulsas of the world. So yeah, it was good to just take care of it.
I kind of went into it. I was telling friends and family who don't get as into Texas football as I do, that really all I was looking for was just a not stressful game. And basically from literally the first play from scrimmage, we could tell it wasn't going to be a stressful game. Sam Ellinger finds Joshua Moore back from his suspension all of last year. He was able to make a big play right off the bat. Shallow cross, hits him in stride, runs down the field, touchdown Texas in a matter of seconds, and basically didn't let off the gas until the backups came in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm. It was, yeah, I'll be honest, it was pleasantly surprising that it happened that quickly. Of course, I predicted a massive blowout, but, you know, the sooner you get there, I think the better, the more comfortable, the easier. And I know personally, I don't know if any other Longhorn fans out there felt this way, but after an off season that felt like it would never end, quite literally, it didn't even feel like the season was here until about 10 minutes before kickoff, and I was almost surprised by how much I enjoyed the game. Like, I had just forgotten what it felt like to sit down and enjoy Longhorn football.
Hell, just to be able to sit down and watch TV and enjoy what was happening and not just be an endless hellscape of doom and gloom and constant pandemic stuff, it was nice to just let that all sort of fall by the wayside and just enjoy the sport, regardless of whether or not we think that it's a good idea to be playing. But you mentioned your predictions for the game coming true or not coming true. So I think it's only natural that we discuss our hot takes from the last episode and see what happened, how close we came. And for you, your prediction was that Texas would hit the over without any assistance from UTEP. When we recorded that over, the over-under was at 61.5. We got to 59. We came really close. Hudson Card almost got us there, too. So, yeah, by our usual standards for these hot takes, a pretty close call.
Yeah. There, I did find, you know, after the game was over and I knew how much we scored, I did my best to track down and research and find somewhere that had less than 59 for the over-under. And I did find it. CBS Sports had 58.5. You know, so that's something.
Partial credit.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we went into it saying during the podcast that 61.5 was it. But yeah, I was actually talking to a friend and he was like, yeah, we're going to run a lot of two tight end sets. And I was like, you know, that's not good for my hot take. but even with the two tight end sets, which we did run a pretty decent amount of, the offense was still explosive. It scored quickly. Vertically, there was a lot of yards after the catch. So yeah, I think that speaks to how pleased everybody should have been with our offense.
I don't think there was anyone who was particularly upset. Probably, I mean, other than maybe you, literally with that Hudson Card near touchdown pass, just because you were sweating it there at the end. I know you had predicted 66-3 final score, and it was looking like that might actually come to fruition. And
right, that was the other thing, was I almost was a prophet, but, you know, some things just aren't meant to be, I guess.
Yeah. sometimes it just hurts like that. It can't be easy for everybody.
Yeah. So then yours was also pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for Alvante Woodard doing a very unnecessary block in the back on a guy who was already running straight past Deshaun Jameson on the punt return, my prediction, my hot take, was that we were going to score at least one non-offensive TD. I did watch Deshaun Jameson return a touchdown, or return a punt return for a touchdown. And, yeah, it got called back by Alvante Woodard during something completely unnecessary. Without that, Jameson probably still easily scores. So, another one that I think we can do partial credit. So, for two of us to get partial credit, that effectively counts as both of us getting one total prediction right, which is way better than our typical record on these.
Right. I'm glad that we're doing these hot take reviews now, because we haven't always kept up with it in prior seasons. And I think that's probably for the best, considering how terrible the track record was. But, you know, it's nice to... Well, I was about to say it's nice to get some, but we didn't even actually get it. It's nice to get close.
Yeah, there might not be any actual moral victories in football, but I think for hot takes, there are moral victories. And for that, we both earned a moral victory last week. So nice little round of applause for us right there.
Yeah, we spent a solid 5 minutes patting our own backs. And now let's go and talk about the team. Plenty more pats to pass around here. The guy's actually playing.
Yeah. And there were a lot of good things that happened, and a lot of those things were things that people expected. I don't think anyone was surprised to see Sam have a big day. Maybe no one was really expecting that big of a day, but everyone kind of knew the offense was going to hum along, just given how we started last year with a worse offense. We have a better offensive coordinator now, so expectations were very high, and I think we more than lived up to that. But there were a lot of unexpected good things that came out in this game.
Yep, and so I have two guys, one on each side of the ball, that really jumped out at me. The first one, Tariq Black. I was surprised because a guy grad transferring from a program like Michigan, I mean, I know that he struggled with injuries, but like, he's not a new commodity, right? And so I kind of had him pigeonholed as a guy that might contribute like 30 catches, 400 yards, and 4 touchdowns this year, but he looked really good. Just really exceeded my expectations there. And then on defense, and this is the one that's actually totally out of the blue that I never would have expected, was Reese Lehto. I thought it looked really good playing at that like hybrid defensive end linebacker spot. And again, this is a caveat that we will probably end up using 100 times throughout the episode, but it's UTEP. But still, for a guy that has bounced around, he's been criticized for not being physical. He hasn't really found a place to fit in the team, been passed up on the depth chart by, you know, multiple people. To actually get on the field and look good was, I think that was a kind of a big deal for him.
Yeah, that was nice to see. And yeah, absolutely not who I was expecting. I think coming into the season, the expectation, or coming in at least into fall camp, I think a lot of people sort of had Byron Vaughns penciled in as the backup to Joseph Osai. We really didn't see a whole lot of Byron Vaughns. I'm pretty sure his mom sent out more tweets than he saw snaps against UTEP, which is fine. Mother Hustla is one of the better follows on all of Longhorn's Twitter. But yeah, Reese Lehto coming in, playing surprisingly well against UTEP, as you said. Definitely one of the bigger surprises. You mentioned Tariq Black. Also, I'd like to throw in there was Brendan Schooler coming in. Another grad transfer who grad transferred from Oregon to Arizona this fall to play with his brother. Then the Pac-12 canceled, so he undid that and ended up transferring to Texas instead. Literally on Reddit the day before the game, someone had made some crazy claim that Schooler was going to score 6 touchdowns for us. And I quite confidently was like, there's no way that he scores 6 touchdowns. I'll be mildly surprised if he scores even 1 offensive touchdown for us. I was expecting him to be a special teams body, and that was it. And he actually showed some pretty impressive moves against UTEP, but he played pretty well. He got in the end zone, managed to shake the defender on his touchdown. I was really impressed for a guy who apparently had only been practicing with the team for about a week.
It's definitely nice to see a guy that can come in and gel that quickly. It doesn't happen often, and I this might be a bad thing to admit on a podcast by the Texas Longhorns, but I wasn't even that familiar with him because I haven't had time to keep up with practice reports and stuff recently. But I think that my feeling of, wait, who, was not unique. I think there were lots of people out there that were saying, wait, who, as he ran into the end zone. So definitely one of the big surprises.
Yeah. And then on the other side of the ball, we already touched on Reese Leto, but I think a lot of people were interested to see other position changes on the defense. Leto being one of the more extreme versions, going from tight end to jack. But we were also looking to see how that linebacker position looked when you had, we started a walk-on in court, Jaques, I am totally butchering that, and it's maybe it's just too late for me to be trying to pronounce names. Mm-hmm. But the other one that people were really looking for is DeMarvion Overshown. Basically, ever since he set foot on campus, there's been this talk about him becoming a linebacker, sort of growing into that role. This was the first game where we got to truly see him play linebacker, having gone through a fall camp where he was the weak side linebacker. So there was a lot of expectations to live up to, and I think for the most part, he was generally pretty impressive for a guy who did not naturally play that position previously.
Oh, yeah, he killed it. I am officially a DeMarvion Overshown truther. I think that he was spectacular during the game. I think that he showed off the same ability, kind of I mentioned in the preview last week, that he has the ability to get to the ball, to find the ball. And sometimes that's just a skill in of its own, and it's not always coachable. But just somebody that has a knack for at least being at the play, right? Because he's kind of had some trouble actually closing the plays and finishing them out. But I think that he's now in a system and in a position that will allow him to do that on a more consistent basis. And as he himself improves, he'll actually be able to finish those plays. So I am definitely very excited about him and what his development means for our defense this year.
Yeah, and he's acknowledged, and this is one of the more positive things, because this wouldn't be the first time for Texas that someone had at least pretended to be relatively excited about a position change, and then it had it all fall apart. But Overshown, in his media availability today, as we're recording on Tuesday, I mean, he talked about what it's going to take for him to develop. He's talked about modeling his game after Clemson linebacker safety hybrid Isaiah Simmons, who was a first rounder this year in the NFL draft. He talked about getting his weight up. He wants to get up to about 230 to be able to play the position more physically. And how much fun he was having getting to be near the ball right in the action there, not have to come crashing down, but instead was already involved in that physical aspect of the game. It seems like he's a guy who's actually really bought in. Again, like I mentioned early on, there had been a lot of talk about him switching basically since he's gotten to campus, but there had always been those sort of rumors that he really didn't want to. So it's nice to see him embracing that change and being pretty open, at least with the media, about what he knows he needs to work on to really become even better in this role.
Yeah, and I haven't had a chance to look at the media days today yet. We are recording here late on a Tuesday, but big day at work, and so I've been very scared of the Isaiah Simmons comparison because, you know, watching him being like a hybrid safety linebacker, I think that naturally, like, Isaiah Simmons is kind of looked at as like that next evolution of that positionless defender. So watching him, that's a comparison that's kind of come to my mind. And every time it happens, I'm just like, no, back up. Like, Isaiah Simmons is special. Like, there's a reason that he was so highly regarded, right? Like, he played 10 different positions over the course of the season for UTEP, literally lining up at like defensive end versus corner versus linebacker versus safety everywhere. But if we can get, you know, half of Simmons' flexibility and 80% of his skill, then that's actually a big-time defensive impact player that we could have an Overshown there. So, yeah, loving to hear what you're telling me there about Overshown and really embracing that position and that switch. And then I think last thing I'll kind of mention here is you got to mention Josh Thompson. He's the other guy that switched positions kind of from that nickel back to that outside corner position. He looked pretty natural out there, and he had himself a pretty good game.
Yeah, and I mean, considering we came into fall camp sort of with that expectation, I guess this switch was made and discussed at length in the spring when Chris Ash first came on, that Thompson would be making that move. But I think the expectations for a lot of fans who might not have followed that as closely were on Jalen Green and Deshaun Jameson taking that step on the outside. It instead went through the game appearing that Josh Thompson was the best outside corner we had. He had an impressive game, played really hard, lots of good tackles, and he got the payoff, got the reward for his hard work this offseason by getting that early interception to sort of start his season off right.
Yep, started off in a big way. And you've got to love that as a, you know, as a confidence builder moving forward. And I think that might actually be kind of like just one of the big takeaways for the team as the whole, is they're all out there having fun, enjoying them. Well, minus one particular individual. They're all out having fun. And I think that's whenever you only have one non-conference game instead of the typical three non-conference games, plus spring practice, plus a spring game, you know, all that is now, instead of all that, you get 80 snaps. And I think that this went about as well as about as well as it could have for the team, just in terms of culture and belief and buy-in, and hopefully helping them get comfortable in two new systems.
Yeah, and obviously with us playing UTEP, it's hard to draw too many conclusions about the positives, given that this was a team where we physically overmatched them in every aspect of the game. But this wasn't a perfect game. There were issues that Texas had where we can definitely overreact to this because, again, we know that we have the physical matchup, the head-to-head matchup with the guy on the other side of the ball in every single position. We should win that battle on raw talent alone. But we struggled in a few areas. So what are those areas that you saw where you're still worried coming out of this UTEP game? I know coming into it, we sort of had questions about the offensive line, just with the cohesiveness, Hookfin being injured, just sort of some concerns as to what the offensive line was going to look like this year, having lost guys like Shackelford and Parker Braun, what the offensive line was going to look like this year.
Yeah, and I think that those, kind of like you're saying with the offensive line, that was an expected one. The other expected one for me is that that Mike, middle linebacker. I think that Juju Mitchell played fairly well, but I don't know that we can quite say that we're going to rely on Mitchell for the season. So I still definitely have that as a question mark. And those were kind of the two big ones. Of course, I've now been converted on Overshown, so that's one question mark. I feel, again, it's just UTEP, but I don't care. I'm on the Overshown bandwagon. So yeah, I'm comfortable to go ahead and not worry about that for the rest of the year. But the other thing that kind of stuck out to me was some defensive back play. I think that nickel is a position that's plagued us for a couple of years. We have Adamora there, and he got beat a couple times in coverage. He had a play where he was just wildly lined up out of position. Just like in the Big 12, if he lines up like that, it's the sort of thing where it's like, hey, how was that guy wide open for a screen pass that he took 30 yards? And I will say that the good news for that play was Caden Stearns was recognizing in the secondary, which is the benefit of having that, you know, that upperclassman behind you, is they'll see if you're lined up wrong. They'll tell you to get over. They'll adjust themselves if they need to cover up. But yeah, some other stuff like the defensive back technique, guys not getting their head turned around, was such a big theme last season. And there were a couple situations where they still weren't able to quite get that part of their technique down. So anybody that wants to be concerned or wants to be pessimistic, definitely, I think, could find a couple things to help themselves out there.
Yeah, but if you don't want to be pessimistic, especially when it concerns the DBs, is I would look towards that San Jose State game in 2017. We played that game. Defensive backs lost a few guys in coverage. San Jose State, being San Jose State, didn't really have a quarterback that could make us pay the price for that. And I think that was a similar situation that we had here against UTEP, is that they just really didn't have the guys to punish us for those mistakes. So coming out of that San Jose State game, there were a lot of concerns going into the USC game that we were going to get boat raced, given that USC has that historical power with wide receivers. They had Darnold and everything. And we were able to bounce back and play great defense. And that secondary was probably the strongest secondary that we've had in the last several years, with Holton Hill, with Chris Boyd, Devontae Davis, Deshaun Elliott, those guys. So I would say that that's the one thing that I would sort of look to as an example of any poor play that we saw today could just be attributed to early in the season. Again, new defensive coordinator, didn't have a spring game, didn't have a spring practice. Fall practice was a lot more toned down compared to what it would usually be, the physicality that you'd typically see under Herman. That was toned down due to COVID. So hopefully it's something that with this bye week between non-conference and the conference schedule that we'll be able to iron out some of those things. But There are things to keep note of there, but then there's also reason to still believe that we're going to be able to make those improvements before Oklahoma can make us pay for it.
Right, and I think that's a good point. I'm definitely not trying to be all doom and gloom about the secondary, because it... So one thing that's kind of funny about these games where a lot of backups play is you might notice there are a lot of mistakes, but then like you notice who it was and you're like, wait, that guy is like a second and third stringer. So like, of course, Jameson and... Josh Thompson, I thought, looked really good. They didn't have any of those errors in coverage, really. So if they're playing the majority of the snaps, then it's obviously not a big deal. And the other guys that I point out, like Adam Mora and Kenyatta Watson, they're young. They're supposed to make these mistakes, and they're supposed to improve over the course of the season. So certainly not trying to be doom and gloom. I would absolutely love to have a repeat of the 2017 Texas defense, because that would just be a lot of fun to watch that caliber of defense with the offense that we have. So that's a championship team.
Definitely. And then the big question, obviously we had concerns going into the game that we wanted to watch against UTEP. Are there any concerns that have popped up for you now that we've seen this team once against a team that they should have overmatched, as I've said already repeatedly? Are there any areas where you're sort of going, I thought this was going to be less of a concern than it was?
I think somewhere that some people might kind of be ringing the alarm bell is the offensive line. Personally, I'm not, but I know that some people thought that they should have gotten more push up front and they were disappointed and missed assignments. But you know, whenever you're moving guys around, that's going to be an adjustment period. Offensive lines need time to gel. They lost, you already mentioned earlier, losing Zach Shackelford, which, I mean, say what you want about Shackelford, but he was a multi-year starter at the most cerebral position on the line, right? Like, he's the captain of that unit, the guy that got guys aligned, the guy that set protections. So, of course, there's going to be an adjustment period whenever a new guy takes over there.
I would say that really showed up, I think, on the stat line for the running backs. It felt like, especially in the first half, Bijan was not having any luck finding any room. And any yards that Roshan or Keontae Ingram were getting, given, again, the talent disparity between us and UTEP, you were expecting there to be large holes, and it seemed like all those yards that they fought for were hard-fought yards. Outside of one sort of big run for Roshan, didn't really find a whole lot of space. Bijan didn't really find a whole lot of space until about the third quarter, at which point the game was already well in hand, and you start to get a little blurry as to why these things are opening up. But I would say that was the only thing, is I was a little bit nervous. And from the sounds of it, it sounds like from Herman during his presser today was talking about how they already feel very confident. So there wasn't a whole lot of focus getting the running backs going in this game. A lot of it was wanting to see how Sam looked, how the wide receivers looked, because the coaching staff felt like they had a lot of question marks and needed to see who was really ready, which is why you saw Sam throw it more than 30 times, even though he only played really for a single half of football. So I think at the very least, that's enough to keep an eye on, especially as we get into playing opponents that are more at our talent level.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there's definitely logic, both in what you're saying about the running backs and kind of what Herman's saying. Like, I don't think anybody should be at all concerned about our running back group. I think we've got a pretty extraordinary amount of talent there. But, you know, kind of like you said, that's going to be kind of dependent on the offensive line. I don't know that, even though I think that we have a lot of talent, I don't know that we have a Saquon Barkley who's going to run for like 1,500 yards with no help from his offensive line. We're not quite there. So I definitely think that line is just going to be the one to watch over the course of the season.
And of course, we would be completely remiss if we talked about this game and did not talk about, I think, the person we can all agree was the true player of the game. The man, the myth, the legend himself, Kai Money, coming through, becoming the first active walk-on, to score a touchdown for the University of Texas in at least 15 years, according to Herman. Had that second quarter touchdown from Sam Ellinger, Got the opportunity to play first with Jake Smith being out and then Jordan Whittington being perennially hurt, getting hurt like two plays into his season again. Kai Money got some time in the slot, and boy, howdy, he made it count. Got a touchdown. I saw at least one UT girl on Twitter hardcore thirsting after the man. So, I mean, you got to feel like the big man on campus if you're Kai Money right now.
Oh, yeah. And that the photo of like Herman giving him the hug on the sideline where it just shows Herman looking all happy and Money, the nameplate showing. There's a lot of potential with that photo. That's all I'm going to say is I'm expecting big things from that photo moving forward, much like, you know, sometimes you see Dicker like wink at the camera or something. You're like, oh, yeah, like that's a gif. that's how I feel about the Kai Money photo.
That's a what now?
That's a GIF.
A GIF?
Are you a GIF?
Oh, I am a GIF, God. Man. Oh, wow. This is something we probably should have covered before we really agreed to host a podcast together. This personality clash might not work out. So
yeah, you know what? We're gonna take this off mic. If this never gets released, then people will know why.
Well, there you go, folks. You heard it here first. The end of the Fire Tom Herman podcast as the GIF wars rage on online. Okay, well, with that, we should cover our new hot takes. What is your hottest take about what you saw on the field Saturday against UTEP?
Oh, God. I don't even know if I want to say it because...
You wrote it down.
I
have to tell the people what you wrote here.
I wrote it down, but this is a constant internal battle. But, yeah, I guess my hot take is that DeMar being overshown is going to be better than Malik. For us,
you softened from what you put in the Google Doc. In the Google Doc, you said okay. Overshown is better than Malik.
Okay,
which is a lot spicier than he will be better.
Okay, he'll be better this season than Malik. I feel fair.
That is still pretty spicy, but yeah, it was very bold in the Google Doc.
I think.
I was like, we try to overdo it on the hot takes, but I think you need to pump the brakes, saying
right.
Overshown
well,
is already better.
Yeah, and I mean, I wrote down the phrasing that you pointed out, but in my defense, this is just like notes. It's not like some contractually binding hot take here, okay, Josh?
I'm pretty sure our audience is going to hold us to all of these things. All
right, well, in that case, then I just better hope that it's true. But, you know, I do think that Overshown is really good. We've kind of already talked about it, and you know, if he's watching Isaiah Simmons and that's who he's hoping to be, then I feel a lot more comfortable in this take.
Definitely. Mine at this point I think is obvious. I talked about it at length yesterday on the last podcast. I really wanted to see a shutout in this game. UTEP scored 3 points, could have been 6 points if their kicker didn't miss his first field goal attempt. So for that, the obvious hot take here has to be fire Chris Ash. Can't expect to compete in the Big 12 if you're not able to completely shut out UTEP, even though, in general, it was a pretty dominating performance, considering how quickly we started putting in the backups in the second quarter.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I think that the best data point that we can get for this is, as you already mentioned, we beat San Jose State 56-0 in Todd Orlando's first year. So I think you can see a pretty clear decline in the program to go from allowing 0 to San Jose State to allowing 3 to UTEP.
I mean, considering we just fired the guy
exactly.
who held San Jose State to 0, if Chris Ash can't even hold a worse team than that San Jose State team to 0, can we really expect him to last that much longer than Todd Orlando?
I think it's pretty clear. You know, checkmate. Sorry, Chris, but clearly not the guy.
Yeah, well, your last check will be in the mail. Turn in your key card. Thanks for coming.
You know, Todd Orlando's available. I don't think USC's having a season, so maybe not it's too late to get him back on a plane down to Austin.
Speaking of getting Todd Orlando back, his short-term employer between being with us and then moving on to USC, he was with Texas Tech for a little while during the offseason. They are our next opponent. So it's time we sort of discuss what we're expecting. Obviously, this is a ways off, or a week and a half, I guess, since we have this early bye week. But yeah, Tech did not look particularly good They were 41-point favorites against Houston Baptist University. They won by two, and honestly, the fact that they won by two is a small miracle. For quite a bit of the game, Houston Baptist looked like the better team.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty depressing. I think that Matt Wells came out after the game and was talking about some issues they were dealing with COVID, and I think that in general this season, especially early on, just as fans and as analysts, we should be more forgiving to programs that struggle early on, because there are so many things keeping these guys from being good right now, right? So much stuff outside of their control is preventing them from preparing and performing at a high level. But that said, winning by two against a really poor FCS program is not the way to start. But at the end of the day, a win's a win, you know? So 1-0, and that's the goal.
I mean, I think there's more to it than just saying 1-0 is the goal. Yeah, obviously, Tech, the goal was to win the game. They won the game. Didn't feel great about it. Like, the talent level is one thing. Just program support. Like, we know what Texas Tech Stadium looks like. It's not like it, I mean, it's not the biggest stadium. It's not the fanciest stadium. But it's a pretty good-sized stadium for being in the middle of West Texas. Jones AT&T Stadium or whatever they call it out there. Compare that to Houston Baptist, who, if you look up Houston Baptist football field that I don't know the name of on Google Maps right now, you turn on satellite view, you will see that there is literally a CVS that is on one sideline of their football field. That is the level of like program support. The disparity there is monstrous. And like, I understand coming out flat. We came out flat against Tulsa and still won by more a couple years ago than Tech did against this Houston Baptist team. And it's not like Houston hasn't been a hotspot for coronavirus. Texas Tech has had 75 players at some point this offseason be sidelined by COVID protocol. So I understand there's a lot of things here working against Texas Tech, but there's a lot of things that we're working against Houston Baptist as well. I don't know how much I'm going to fully buy in on that being a good excuse for Texas Tech to go from a 41-point favorite to probably should have lost that game.
Yeah, and they gave up like 600 passing yards almost. So I totally hear you. I'm with you. I'm trying to be forgiving, you know. I don't want to give up on their season because of one really, 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 really poor performance. But I will concede that the way in which they struggled, you know, it wasn't one of those like just total slugfests where both teams are constantly turning the ball over and missing field goals that it ends like 15-13 or something. Giving up that many yards through the air for a team that consistently, you know, tends to struggle on defense is not a good look in week one.
Definitely not. And the one area that, like, I didn't even realize that I was supposed to be rooting for Houston Baptist this hard, the connection that Texas fans had to make, other than obviously you sort of just root against every conference opponent or every conference mate because this isn't the SEC and conference pride can fuck off. Mm-hmm. So really, if you're not rooting against every single team in our conference to lose every single game, I'm not sure we're really working with the same energy here. But on top of that, we had Caden Stern's brothers, actually, he has two brothers, which itself was a revelation for me. That might have been known if you followed recruiting closer than I did in Caden Stern's class. But two brothers, he has Josh and Jareth, both play wide receiver, both play Houston Baptist. Both of them had more than 130 yards. One of them had more than 200 yards receiving against Texas Tech. So hopefully that sets the tone for the Stern's brothers being a huge thorn in Texas Tech's side this season.
Big shout out, big day for all the Stearns bros, I guess. I kind of knew, like, I vaguely remember seeing like Caden post on Twitter like congratulations messages for his brothers when they commit and stuff, but it certainly wasn't a connection that I had going on during the game. But it is kind of one of those cool coincidences, and I also totally agree. I enjoyed watching the Fun Belt beat up on three Big 12 teams, so I'm totally on board with rooting against all conference opponents. I really can't think of a single Big 12 team that like I just root for like openly without, unless I just happen to dislike the team they're playing more.
Yeah, I mean, I have enjoyed Big 12 teams winning. Like the first year for the college football playoff when TCU got left out and absolutely annihilated Ole Miss in the Peach Bowl. That felt pretty good. Because, I do not give a shit about any of our conference mates, and the least of all being OU. But there was something cathartic about being able to watch TCU just throttle Bo Wallace and what was supposed to be an extremely good Ole Miss team that spent much of that year ranked in the college football playoff top four. So games like that, like I think I loathe the conference pride of the SEC so much that I would root for a Big 12 team over almost any SEC team, other than if it's OU and A&M, in which case we're team meteor the whole way. But yeah, that for the most part, it's yeah, if every Big 12 team loses to a G5 school other than us, really don't care. I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh, such a rough year for the Big 12. It really reflects poorly on us. I don't give a shit.
Right, like maybe
I really don't.
And the really sad part is like maybe someday we'll get to a point where we will care about how strong our conference is because it matters for our playoff chances. But we're just not there. I mean, maybe this year is the year, but it's definitely one of those things where I'm going to cross that bridge when we get to it. And until then, I'll just happily watch Kansas get blown out. And who were the other
Iowa
two?
Iowa State choke.
Yeah, Iowa State. Oh, I feel a little bit bad for Iowa State, but
and then
not that
also
bad.
Blew it too.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't even know how we got onto this tangent, but
yeah, we kind of spiraled out a bit there. But talking about Texas Tech.
Yeah, Texas Tech. I think we've done enough talking about Texas Tech. First time we're going to see Alan Bowman in the 3 years that he's been a starter at Texas Tech, because he has not had enough chances yet this season to get injured and knocked out of the game. This is probably the one right now that I would have circled as the one, like, if any of our games are going to get canceled or postponed for any reason, this is going to be the one because of the aforementioned issues that Tech has had with non-Raider rash infections. So, 75 players have been in the COVID protocol at some point during Tech's offseason, which is astounding. Because I think for us, I think we're like maybe 10 to 20 guys. It's hard to tell because we haven't been super transparent with it. Significantly fewer. If it was 75, I feel like our hand would be sort of forced to be like, yeah, we kind of struggled with it.
Right. It's certainly pretty absurd. It does kind of go to show that, I mean, I feel like as a Texas fan, we have been pretty fortunate with the way everything is broken for us. Because I think that for the most part, our offseason for, I think that everybody should be pretty happy with how it went. Like the guys were active. Well, I don't want to say they should be happy because I mean, there are people on all sides of the political spectrum, but for the fact that guys were able to express themselves, but also managed to do it safely. Right. Just given how visibly open our guys were about those things, about going to protests. I think the fact that they were safe while doing it and kind of managed to keep the team healthy, is a positive takeaway.
Absolutely. So let's just dive on in to these predictions, pretending that Texas Tech is definitely going to happen 100%, no issues. What is your score prediction for this game?
Well, I'm just going to run it back until 66-3, which, you know, going into the season, if I had said that I was going to have a prediction of 66-3 for a conference opponent, it would have been pretty laughable. But Texas Tech looked really bad, so I'm just going to keep going with it until there's a reason not to.
Yeah, I think really you should probably just stick with that prediction until it does come true. I think that's only fair to have that level of expectation for that game.
Probably, and you know, eventually it has to be true, right? 66-3, that's pretty... I'm not asking a whole lot there. I'm only asking for 66 points. So
right.
It's... I'm being sarcastic for all the listeners that can't see me like Josh can. No, 66-3 would be pretty incredible, but I'm just going to do it because why not?
Yeah, and I'm trying to look it up. Doesn't seem like anyone's really got a line or an over-under on this game, but I have a feeling 63 points is probably well above that line, being two Power 5 schools, even with how good we looked versus how bad Tech looked. Plus, it's Lubbock. We're going to Lubbock anyway. Things are going to get weird. So who knows what that line is going to look like. But if we can go into Lubbock, even against a bad Tech team, and just absolutely obliterate them, I think that's got to feel good because Lubbock is up there with Ames, with Manhattan as being sort of those spooky locations in the Big 12 that even if the team is bad, you don't really want to head in there and have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. It's always weird. Although the last time the weirdness worked out well for us, you know, with the LJ Crabtree, I don't know, redemption arc, if you could call it that. But no, totally agree. I think that really any kind of solid win would be satisfactory, and I think that's kind of more where you're leaning with your prediction.
Yeah, I'm thinking that it's not going to be as thorough a beatdown, obviously. I'm going 49-17, Texas, obviously winning that one. Big margin of victory. But the biggest thing that I'm going with, I think Sam should, in theory, play a lot more, at least deep into the third quarter. And I'm thinking if we're going to be passing at the rate that we're going to be passing at, and given how bad Tech looked against an FCS quarterback, I think there's really no reason to not expect Sam to re-break his record. He set his personal record for passing yards in a single game initially last year against LSU. In the first half alone against UTEP, he broke that, hit 429 or 430, whatever that was exactly. I think 500 is well within reach against this Tech team before the end of the third quarter. So I'm saying 49-17, and Sam breaks his individual single game passing record.
It's really not that crazy considering the competition that just threw for almost 600. So I'll buy that. And you know what? For my hot take, I'll go similar but different vein. Also related to our passing offense. But I'm going to say four different players catch touchdown passes from Sam. And Tariq Black has at least two.
At least two. Okay.
So that's... Blood. That's at least five.
Yours written down.
No, I didn't. I realized as you were giving your hot take that I had not that I had not prepped one. But basically, at least five total touchdowns for Sam, four different receivers, two for Tariq Black.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll have to make sure to write that one down. That way, we can circle back to it, so we can actually be diligent this year as you're making the change to the Google Doc. But that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening to us ramble for yet another episode. We hope you enjoyed the return to Texas football for the 2020 season, and we hope you've enjoyed and agreed in totality with every single one of our thoughts about the game against UTEP, even though we didn't necessarily agree between the two of us. Hopefully you have blindly agreed with both of us simultaneously on everything we've said. We will have another episode for you after the Texas Tech game next week in Lubbock. Until then, be sure to follow us on Twitter at @theFTHpodcast to see when I, again, post highlights that piss off the Swamp Aggies and LSU. They were extremely mad at me. Chris Collinsworth had made a crack about no one in college being able to cover Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So I posted the video of Chris Brown taking his head off in the LSU game last year. And that is now my most retweeted, most liked, most viewed, most interacted with tweet of all time on the podcast. So definitely worth the misrepresentation of what happened in that game by using that. Extremely funny, and it made me extremely happy that at some point in my life I had the foresight to be like, hey, I only need notifications from people I follow. Anyone else tweets at me, I don't need to see that.
Yeah, there were definitely a lot of, I don't even want to say angry LSU fans, just insecure. Like, coming off a championship, do you really, like, why would you care about some random, like, fan podcast that makes a joke about one play from a game that you won? I don't get it. But yeah, plus Chris Brown was actually really good that game. So it's okay to say, hey, we won the game, but then also understand that Chris Brown did a good job, at least covering Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the passing game, even though we didn't really stop him on the ground. But yeah, anyways, it was definitely kind of an entertaining thread to follow.
About the only replies that I got from LSU fans that I respected were the ones who simply sent back the GIF, Clyde Edwards-Helaire doing horns down in the end zone after scoring a touchdown. Yeah. And not saying anything else. For that, I was like, you know what? Fair play. Whatever. That's fine. Doesn't bother me. And like I said, we had, just for general interactions with the tweet, I think we had more than like 50,000 people click on the tweet, more than like 120,000 actually just viewed it. 40,000 specifically took the time to click on the video and watch the video. So, I mean, if Chris Collinsworth can just tee up easy ones, and this Thursday, I think, is Bengals-Browns. So, if he says something about Joe Burrow, maybe I can get the highlight of Joseph Osai picking him off or something.
Yeah.
And just keep those LSU fans mad because, yeah, I think we jumped by like 20 or 30 followers on Twitter, and that alone is worth it to me. Just keep growing that audience of, like, people who don't want to hear from us.
Yeah, and RIP LSU week, because I know we were supposed to be in Baton Rouge this past weekend. It would have been amazing to actually get that chance to run back at LSU and kind of take our revenge, but even without that, it was a great weekend for Texas football.
Having seen what we did this weekend, I have no problem just boldly stating that I think we would have beaten LSU by at least 2 touchdowns in Baton Rouge this year.
Oh, yeah. And they can't prove us wrong.
Can't prove us wrong. I mean, Sam would have absolutely destroyed them. And I'm going to go ahead and just continue the theory that LSU created COVID so that they wouldn't have to see themselves get annihilated by Sam Ellinger in Death Valley this year. I think they're hiding behind it. And I think the truth will come out eventually. The deep state of Louisiana. The deep south state of Louisiana.
Yes, the state with a like 70% literacy rate somehow developed a global
pandemic
respiratory
purpose.
Virus. You know, not even the worst COVID conspiracy theory I've heard, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to get into it. Today was a weird day at work. But keep an eye on our Twitter, where we'll hopefully have more of that stuff. In addition, we are super bad custodians of our Google Voice line for the hot take line. So Google actually deactivated our hot take line. We are working on getting something set back up for you guys to be able to call in. So keep an eye on Twitter. I'll share that number at some point, hopefully before the Texas Tech game. That way next week we can have a viewer or a listener, whatever you want to call it, can have a clip with a voicemail, or we can read a text message that we receive on that line and include it on the podcast, because I really like doing that last year for the limited opportunities that we had.
Yeah, and so everybody listening, don't forget to go into your contacts, pull up the Fire Tom Herman podcast, because I know that you had that old hot take line in there on speed dial, but once you get that new number, you will need to change it, because we won't get your old one anymore. So I'm sure that everybody had us in their fave five and is going to need to keep it updated as we go.
Definitely. Top 8 spaces on MySpace. The Fire Tom Herman hot take line. I'm certain of it. But with that said, we will see you on the next episode. Hook 'em.